Discussions in Depth Psychology is powered by Pacifica Graduate Institute. Your host is Bonnie Bright.
Hello, and welcome to Discussions in Depth Psychology, which is powered by Pacifica Graduate Institute. I'm your host, Bonnie Bright, and I'm also a graduate of Pacifica in the Depth Psychology program there. And this series is dedicated to spotlighting some of the individuals who are doing some very exciting research and work in the field of Depth Psychology through Pacifica. And I'm here today with Susan Greylock, who is currently completing her dissertation research on a very important and interesting topic, and that is wolf conservation and the arts. So we'll learn more about that in just a moment. But first of all, thanks, Susan, so much for being with me today.
Yes, great to speak with you.
Well, I'm so happy to have you here because this topic is not one that I think we come across very often, and it's maybe not one that people think about necessarily in the field of depth psychology so specifically, but we will talk more about that and reasons for it, and I can't wait to get into that. Let me first just read your bio, though, so that everybody has a background on you and some understanding of where you're coming from. Susan Greylock is currently completing dissertation research examining how the arts can support conservation. Her research is focused on wolf conservation in the U.S. portion of the Yellowstone to Yukon Wildlife Corridor and incorporates digital storytelling and her own arts-based inquiry. Susan has an MA in Depth Psychology from Pacifica Graduate Institute and over a decade of professional experience in marketing and communications for values-based brands. She loves to find herself outside, crossing paths with other species. This is great, Susan. I love all of the things that seem to be converging in your bio there. You obviously have a very diverse background, but right now your focus is very heavily based on wolves in particular, and of course the animal world in general, and also the arts. And this is a really interesting convergence of these three kind of different angles to a topic that is actually considered depth psychological. I'm wondering if we can start by maybe you just giving us some description of your research and what you're doing.
Yeah, definitely. So I've been speaking with artists and also biologists who have an interest in wolf conservation. And I started out looking at artists across the country, but as I got into it, I really found out that focusing on the Yellowstone to Yukon area was really interesting because in the U.S. right now, it's like that's really where there's so much energy around wolf conservation. You know, the Yellowstone Wolf Reintroduction Project is like 3 decades old and really has taken root. But at the same time, wolves have been coming down and repopulating and returning to that area too, down from Canada. So there's a very interesting, energetic thing happening there with wolves crossing paths again with humans like they really haven't here in North America for almost a century. So it's really exciting to talk to the scientists who have been working on the ground there for decades. And also to the artists in that area who a lot of them have been really called to start creating work that is documenting wolves and creating conversations about wolves and just trying to really show wolves and present them in a new way that I think people are beginning to see them now, that we're having this sort of reintroduction, I would say, as humans to wolves.
Yeah, I think it's just so exciting, and I had mentioned to you earlier, I also had the opportunity for the very first time in my life to visit Yellowstone just a few months ago, and it was so interesting to be able to see the wolves there. Now, I didn't actually see any in the wild in Yellowstone, but I was able to visit the recovery center that's in West Yellowstone there and see wolves fairly close up, and it was just absolutely so stunning and amazing. And of course, in depth psychology, we have this real notion, I think, that animals are truly what we refer to often or what Jung referred to as the other, and I put that in quotes, because they are not humans, and yet there's so much that we can actually learn from the animal world. And so I wonder, actually, if you can talk a little bit about that, because some people that are listening to this will be saying, I thought this was a program on psychology. So here we are talking about wolves and scientists and conservation of wolves and reintroducing them into the wild and all of that. So how would you say that it actually relates to psychology?
That's a great question. I think, you know, when you look at Jungian psychology in particular and depth psychology and how it arose, the social activism piece of it that was really part of the inception of the movement of depth psychology and how that shifted over time to more of the psychoanalytic or the consulting room model of depth psychology. And I think what we're seeing now, especially which is really heavy in the program that I'm in at Pacifica, which merges community psychology and eco-psychology with depth psychology, I think it's really a return to depth psychology, getting into more of its rootedness and its earthiness. I mean, to me, bringing depth psychology into the world and into real issues on the ground, things that we're, as a culture and a society, we're debating, is really where I think the next generation of depth psychology is focused. And, you know, you were talking about Yellowstone, and in my mind, I was going through the first time I was in Yellowstone and how I got there, and I think it's an interesting parallel to this topic, but wolves entered my life through dreams. And looking at the wolf as just a dream symbol, as could be the tendency in psychology, I found to be very limiting. And I started painting the wolf and just kind of getting more connected to what the dream symbol may have meant. And in fact, that actually brought me into wanting to know more about the lived experience of wolves here. And I think that was a really interesting shift in the animal coming to me in a dream, but then becoming part of my everyday life and trying to understand why, you know, why are there not wolves in California? Why have there not been for 80 to 100 years? And where are the wolves and why are they not here? And, you know, it's a story that not a lot of people know, but I think there's a lot more awareness now. But, you know, it was a very intense relationship we've had with wolves in North America. And that really led me into this work. And at one point, I even found myself at a state hearing in California speaking on behalf of people who also wanted endangered species status for wolves here in California, should they start to return, which now we know they are. So it's really interesting to me to hold psychology in that way, that it could inform really your social activism and your lived everyday experience as a human, and not just your experience of psyche that may be more individual and more personal, but really taking it into the collective.
Yes, that's so exciting, and that's been very much my experience of my own education at Pacifica, too, that capacity to really bring together these various aspects, which is the depth psychology, the natural world under the umbrella of eco-psychology, and also the symbolism, because when we start looking at dreams, you know, dreams are the voice of the earth, dreams are the voice of the unconscious, and it's so fascinating how we can actually receive messages and begin to understand even things like our calling here and how we can, as you mentioned, take action in the world and make our own contribution to such things that are so important to us and to our culture as well. And I have myself done a lot of research on animals that show up in dreams because that's such a profound area of interest for me. And I'm aware that James Hillman, who has a really great book called Dream Animals, if you haven't seen that, anybody that's listening to this, you might want to check that out. There's actually a beautifully illustrated version. In that book, he wrote that dreams recover what the world forgets. And I think it kind of speaks to what you were just saying, Susan, in the sense that these dream animals often show up for us in a way that then spurs us to take some kind of action, not only on behalf of their own species, which often can be the case, but also in just bringing people, I think, to greater consciousness.
Yeah, and in that book, the paintings are a really important part of the book, and those are by Margot McLean, and they're really phenomenal. And I think she writes in that book, too, and talks about how it's not really just about the dream fox. It's about the fox under your porch. You know, psychology needs to think about the animals not just as an object in our dreams or something that is informing our individual selves, but they're a part of psyche, and dreams are still a place where we interact with them, especially as they're becoming more and more marginalized on the planet, but that it's not to be disconnected from the lived experience. And I was reminded of that in a really fun way during the research the first time I went to Yellowstone, and I never really thought I would see wild wolves during this research. And at some point, after talking to so many artists or photographers or filmmakers or scientists who've been tracking wolves, and then being in this area of the country where wolves live in packs, I didn't actually even feel like I needed to see wolves. I felt the presence of wolves in that place. But I was in Yellowstone in April, and I was there, and there's wolf watchers who were along the side of the road, and I was talking to them about what draws them to Yellowstone and why they, you know, spend a lot of time standing outside very cold waiting to see a wolf. And then this one man, Rick McIntyre, who's been really an integral part of the wolf project in Yellowstone, he was there with a scope, and then he turned to me and he said, "Would you like to see your dream come true?" Which to me was funny on so many levels, since a dream of wolves is what really initiated this research. And so I went over to his scope and I looked inside and I saw the Molly pack in Yellowstone, a dozen of them, racing across the ridge on the top of Lamar Valley. And it was so altering, you know, it was so otherworldly, but so right there in that place. And that moment of just seeing wolves and realizing it was like an epiphany of sorts for sure. And I love the fact that he said, have your dream come true. For me, it was really kind of illuminating the connection between our dream life and our lived life and how psyche is immersed in all of that and that it's continuous.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. I have such goosebumps when you tell that story. That's so amazing. And it just occurs to me that the synchronicity that is at work in that situation and in so many of these kinds of situations when we just begin to start looking and the whole outer, what we consider the outer world for most of us is actually, I think both Jung and Hillman said that we are in the psyche rather than the psyche being in us. We are in the soul. That's the whole world soul. And so when you start thinking about it, the dream came to you. You began to turn your attention to it. You started to focus in on that. And then, of course, these sorts of events are probably occurring around us all the time. But it suddenly you started noticing it and it started showing up for you at these kind of opportune times. So it must be such a validating feeling of knowing that you're on the right track in your work.
Yeah, and I think the second person I interviewed, who I just found through an internet search in Spokane, when I talked to her, it's been lovely in general how people are so welcoming and interested in talking about this topic. And this woman, artist, her name is Pam Armtrout, she invited me to her house, and I sat down with her and talked about her paintings, which are phenomenal. And I said, well, how did this come about? And she said she grew up in Canada on a reservation for part of her childhood, and there were wolves there, and she was aware of their presence, but hadn't really thought of it as an adult, and had a whole career in a trade in an urban area, and then retired to Spokane and actually started being visited by wolves in her dreams. And then she started painting, and she's completely self-taught, and her paintings are phenomenal, representations of wolves and humans and wolves and the way they sort of merge in her paintings. And you know, at that moment, too, I was like, this is a thing. People dream about animals, and it enters their waking experience in a really interesting way. Especially at this time, I think it's significant. And that's one of the things that Jung wrote about that drives this research, I think, is that, you know, he talked about how when there's something lacking in a culture, the compensation that's needed will often arise through artists and the arts. And that's the idea that sort of drives me. And when I mention that to other artists, I think there's a sense of recognition that, oh, yeah, I think I was in some way called to do this. I don't know why. There's not actually a logical reason why I started painting wolves. It just sort of happened, or why I started spending many hours outside photographing wolves, or why I was called to start telling stories of wolves. And I think it's really interesting, especially as I've been focusing on this region where there's a shift happening with wolves and humans and the connection between them. I think it's meaningful that people in that area are beginning to create art about wolves to kind of give depth to the understanding of what's happening. In a way, I think that traditional conservation communication really can't always get at. I think that's what drives my interest in art as a possible communication tool for conservation, because it's very easy for words or traditional communication around an issue to get really locked into the duality of that issue. You know, the wolf haters and the wolf lovers in the case of wolf conservation. It's very easy to get locked back into that trap. And I think there's something about art and the arts that can really kind of cut through that, and that it doesn't take sides. It's just presenting something that people can resonate with in a more significant way.
Yes, I so totally agree. And they often say is that cultural thing, pictures are worth 1,000 words. And of course, the imagery that comes through art, even whether it's a visual image such as art that we're used to seeing, like a painting, or whether it's through poetry or some other kind of the arts that we are able to sort of tap into, we often tap into that in a very different way than with our rational mind. And so it definitely has an impact on us in a very different way. And it's one thing that I love very much about depth psychology as a whole, because it allows things to emerge from the margins and from underneath the surface of things, which is what we normally see. So all of these kind of invisible things are able to come into our field of awareness, and all of a sudden we have the opportunity to then know about them. It creates new ways of knowing that aren't the traditional ways that we're familiar with. But it also, particularly again, when it comes to the natural world, is almost it sounds like it's a compensatory sort of process, because as we're doing more and more to destroy the planet as human species, the more I think the natural world needs to come forward and reach out to us to help pull us back from the brink of extinction, basically. And anybody who is familiar with the work of Jungian analyst Jerome Bernstein, he's written an amazing book called Living in the Borderland, which talks exactly about that, how nature is reaching out to us. You're probably familiar with that book. Has that had a part at all in your own research?
Yeah, I think that's a great book. It's really one of my favorites. And I think it touches on also the types of people who are called to that place. And I think artists are often borderlanders themselves. I mean, they are often more on the fringe of our culture and receptive and sensitive to information that you may not be connected to if you're more in the fray, I think. And I think that's a great example, the borderlander, an idea that he talks about. And I've also found to be really interesting, as I've been talking to biologists, and, you know, I originally started talking to biologists because I wanted to get more of the background, the natural history of wolves, and there's biologists who've been working in, for decades in the Yellowstone area up to the Canadian border who know so much about wolves. And when I originally started interviewing them more as background, what I found was, in fact, they themselves are also storytellers for wolves. No one could have a better story than a scientist who spent so much time in the backcountry following wolves and watching them and learning about them. And there's a great book called Wild Wolves I Have Known. And I think it's mostly biologists telling stories of individual wolves they have come to know in the field. And it's really just very beautiful storytelling and very sensitive and nuanced. And, you know, and also talking to other biologists, a lot of them have looked to the arts to express what they're coming to know or what they're sensing in a way that the scientific methodology that they need to use in their day job may not be able to express, but that the scientists may go to turn to painting or photography as a way to express more of the depth of what I think they experience in the field around this other species.
Yeah, that's a beautiful example of how these different disciplines can come together in order to communicate something to us that's over and above just the usual. And I really love to hear that, because bringing science and the arts together, I think you could never go wrong with that. It's always going to serve as a bridge to greater knowing and also to greater action, I think, on the part of people who are able to benefit from whatever that is, whether it's photographs or art or storytelling, which is also an art form. There's so many different ways that that can come about. And I have to imagine, well, I'm actually wondering what some of the current trends and research are that have inspired your work, because you must have looked at different arts movements and maybe some phenomenology. What else has been meaningful to you in the work as you've gone forward?
Yeah, I mean, conservation communication is interesting, but also there's a lot of fields that come together that interest me. And I think animal studies certainly is, you know, an emerging academic topic that is close to my heart, but I think also the community psychology and eco-psychology approach that I get in the CLE program at Pacifica, the way it's had a focus on activism and being out in the world. And I think bringing that into some of these other academic fields like phenomenology or animal studies or even communication, I think adding that piece to them has really enriched them, the way I think about academic work. And there's some wonderful arts movements out there. I'm really interested in the Dark Mountain Project that's come out of the UK, artists and writers doing moving work that's really connected to psyche. And you know what I've found really interesting in this field, as I've talked to so many scientists, that really moves me is how open they are to the social sciences and psychology in general. And I always think when I'm talking to a biologist, they're going to think, oh, a psychologist or even a eco-psychologist, you know, or someone interested in art, you know, that they think, oh, it's not serious a discipline. But in fact, it's really been moving to me how open and excited biologists are to see other fields interested in conservation. Because, you know, when it comes down to, I think I've heard this at least six times, a biologist say, you know, we have such passion for the work that we do, but our discipline is as it is. And there's this whole element of conservation that is not about animals and wildlife, it's about humans. And if we don't make that connection, this is not going to work. And I know in Yellowstone, I've heard they're bringing psychologists and social scientists into some of the park projects because there's so many people moving through there, and they really need someone to kind of link the humans with the conservation work to help bridge that gap. And I've heard that from scientists in Europe who are doing wolf conservation work too, is that know, eco-psychology and psychologists are so essential to add that other layer to the work we're doing as biologists.
Yes, it's kind of all hands on deck, I think, when it comes to conservation, because it's such an urgent issue, and I'm really thrilled to hear that there's that openness to welcoming others, because it just seems like it would enrich everything so much. I mean, again, the scientists have this amazing background. They're able to provide the biology, the history, and all of those very pertinent pieces, but to bring in the psychology and the social sciences and the arts now, of course, as we're talking about, really just brings so many different dimensions to it and makes it really into a tapestry that is so much more dynamic and almost it becomes more alive, I'm sure, in the process of studying, and therefore also some of the solutions and the work that can be done toward that end.
Yeah, I think the collaboration and cooperation is going to be a nice, healthy trend in conservation work in the coming years. And you know, one of the most beautiful projects that I've discovered in my work is the Yellowstone to Yukon Wildlife Corridor, and that project to protect this very large piece of land from Yellowstone out pretty wide, like all the way up to the Washington border, and then up through Canada, through Banff and Jasper, and then into the Yukon. And it's a massive piece of land, and protecting that land that's owned in so many different ways, which involves transnational issues, it involves national versus state issues, and all these different kinds of conservation groups working together at different levels, and it's actually working. I mean, you can go to their website, Y2Y, and see the image of the land they've been protecting and how much in progress they've made in the last decade to get land protected so that there's large enough open areas for wildlife to move through and have the amount of space they need for migration patterns.
So glad to hear it. That's just great. Susan, just segueing a little bit, you had mentioned earlier the CLE program at Pacifica, and of course that stands for Community Liberation and Eco-Psychology. And for those people who are listening to this who don't know, community is a pretty obvious one, but can you just share briefly a little bit about what those stand for?
Yeah, community psychology, which is a fairly new field, is really about bringing psychologists into the field and changing the reputation, I'd say, that psychologists have for having the answers and driving the change. I mean, a community psychologist's role is to go into a community, and maybe it's their own community, but to find out what the community needs, help them understand what's happening. If there's an issue they have or some change they want to make, the community psychologist really works to sort of help bring that to the fore and help the dots connect and let what needs to happen, happen. I mean, it's really about facilitating and sort of disappearing into the work. It's not at all ego-driven. You're a good community psychologist. Your name doesn't come up around the project. The project and the people, you know, in that community are the ones driving it. And it's a really beautiful model in psychology that I think has many applications all over the world now. But it's a fairly new field. And you know, liberation psychology is really been rooted in the social justice movements that came out of South America and Central America, and has a similar ethos of really supporting a community in driving the change that they want to see and helping social justice movements take root and find their voice. And eco-psychology, also a newer field, is really about the significance of our relationship with the more than human world and how important our relationship is with all the other forms of life on this planet, and really illuminating that. So bringing all those under the depth umbrella is really dynamic. I think it's hard to explain how much they connect. And I think for many of us in the program, doing your field work and your research is when you really get like how synergistic those fields are together and how intricately they can work together and really inspire each other.
Yes, and one thing I really appreciate about Pacifica, I'll just say this in passing, is that requirement actually for particularly this program, the CLE program, to do field work, because that puts students and researchers out in the field where they can actually make a difference and have kind of a hands-on experience of working either with community or with the natural world. And it just becomes a very different thing. You know, it gets psychology or depth psychology, as we were discussing here, obviously, kind of out of the classroom, out of the laboratory, and into the world where things can really happen.
Yeah, and I did my first field work in community art studios. And I think for me, I can see now there is an awareness, being in a small studio, but with very specific group of people, I was with disabled adults in an urban area for one setting, and then I was with children, at-risk kids in an urban area for another setting. And in both of those, I think I really got a sense of psyche emerging through art, and also and how it emerges in a collective like that, in a small community of an art studio. I mean, that was really informative for me, and I think I sort of go back to that sometimes and think of the feeling in that space with people focused on their art making. And in some way, I see that among this larger group of artists I'm looking at in my research, but I still kind of, I think I get the feeling for how they're connecting into something, you know, like a really big studio.
Yeah. Well, it's really exciting to hear that. And obviously, everything that you did has now circled back around and is contributing to all of the research that you're doing. And of course, you're in the dissertation phase of your PhD, so that should be complete soon, and you will have that finished piece to look at. I think it will be so fascinating to see how all of those experiences and pieces, every one of them, converges to come together to create that final piece. What about your plans for the future once that dissertation is complete? Do you know what you're going to do next with this?
I'm really interested in eco-psychology, but really I think the issue of human-wildlife coexistence is so important right now, and I feel like that's where my work will go. I mean, this work has been focused on wolves, but my interest has always been in all kinds of species. Right now there's a lot of other species, too, that probably need support with research, but I can see myself holding both sides. I love to teach and work on building eco-psychology programs. I don't think there's that many in the U.S. right now. But also really just expanding this kind of work. While doing this research, I've really come to see the opportunities in the conservation world for a social scientist, and especially an eco-psychologist, and with the community psychology aspect that really trains a person to integrate into a community and work really well within an organization. So I think I see those pieces really coming together in my future work.
Oh, it's just so exciting to hear. Well, I really wish you all the best in your work. It's just absolutely wonderful work and really remarkable. And I'm just so grateful, even just for this conversation, has infused me with kind of a new energy around our own interaction with the natural world and with animals in particular. So very exciting stuff. I've been speaking today with Susan Greylock, who is currently completing dissertation research, examining how the arts can support conservation. And in particular, she's been working with wolves. Again, very exciting stuff. You can find out more about some of the topics that she's working on at wolflostandfound.org and also Alpha Bestiary, spelled B-E-S-T-I-A-R-Y, alphabestiary.com. And, of course, Susan is also available on LinkedIn, so if you would like to know more about her or connect with her, you can go there and look for her there. Susan, thank you so much for spending some time with me today.
Yeah, it was great to talk to you. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Discussions in Depth Psychology, powered by Pacifica Graduate Institute with host Bonnie Bright.